And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. An old friend and author, Monica Millerino Miller, is with us. Her book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis, published by our good friends at Catholic Answers and naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Hey, it's great to see you again. You never age. You look exactly the same. You look exactly the same.
It's all makeup.
Yeah, yeah. You've written many, many books over the years, haven't you? I mean, and your major focus over the years, in my mind, it was always the pro-life movement.
Well, I have a book, Abandoned, the Untold Story of the Abortion Wars.
Right.
Yeah. On that subject.
Are you still involved heavily in that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
All the time.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Why did that become such a great love for you to be involved in that particular movement?
Oh, wow. There's a big story there. But I was living in Carbondale, Illinois. I had just graduated with a degree in theater.
Oh. That's why you wrote that book on the Passion, right?
Partly, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And I met a woman at a retreat at the Newman Center in the Holy Week of a long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away.
She was involved in something called the pro-life movement, okay? That was the first time I'd even heard those words. Mm-hmm. And I started palling around with Shirley. And then I moved to Chicago to study for my master's degree in theology. So I was going through the THs, from theater to theology.
I see, okay. Then those are natural.
Yeah, right. they get their companions. especially Alec Guinness,
he's your model.
You're right. But in any case, then I met Joe Scheidler.
Okay,
And after that, I never looked back.
Right. So. Now, the beginning of this particular book, The Roots of Human Dignity, you say you may be holding in your hands a small volume, but it contains big ideas, and the ideas matter. Indeed, these two words sum up the premise of this work. Since many regard social justice, there is a popular notion all religions, when reduced to their essentials, are basically the same. We hear that a lot. Even lately, we've heard that kind of idea.
Indifferentism.
Yeah, but how could that be? Why did Jesus bother?
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
This book, the introduction says, what we're really focused on here is ideas matter.
Right.
And it matters what you believe, it matters what you think, what is your worldview. And what I'm trying to do, Doug, in this book is perhaps, and that's why Catholic Answers took it, is the most basic apologetics. And so what do I mean by that? I want to show even a non-believer why Judeo-Christian religious tradition, the teachings of those traditions, protect and advocate the dignity of the human person more than any other faith system.
Right. You say what it means to be human is really
what
you're talking about.
What it means to be human, yes.
Right.
And so that should be a reason why you would want to be interested in Judeo-Christianity and ultimately Catholicism.
Right.
This is a kind of a triangle in some respects. So I'm interested in explaining the relationship between God, the world that he created, and the human person in relationship to God and the world.
Okay.
And the importance of history and the importance of the material world as the medium in which God actually saves the human race.
Well, you talk about Genesis in the beginning. One of the things you talk about, the idea of the Judeo, ultimately Christian idea of the fact that there is history, that life isn't just this cyclical thing that goes on, that there actually is this linear aspect to it. Why is that important?
Because God is taking the world towards a climax and towards a goal. So religion, as I characterize it, and perhaps I'm a little, I don't know what the word would be, but hopefully it's not disrespectful, but ancient pagan religion I summarize in two words. It's about get out, okay? Get out. What do I mean by get out? Get out of the world. Get out of your body. Mm-hmm. The world of time and matter is at least insignificant, mm-hmm. and at most, it's absolutely evil.
It's almost kind of dualistic ideas.
Dualism, exactly. Kind of thing, right? So Judaism is the revolutionary corrective mm-hmm. of that ancient pagan pessimism, that the material world comes to us without any inherent meaning.
Meaning, right.
And so what has to happen is that we have to impose a meaning on this meaningless world of matter that we got dropped into. And you know, as we progress in this book, Doug, as I'm sure you already noticed, but that dualism is very much with us now.
Oh, absolutely. And from some ways, it's accentuated, isn't it?
Well, as I talk about, our whole view of sexual ethics is shot through with this dualism that the human body doesn't really have an inherent meaning.
Right.
Being male or female is just stuff.
Right, right.
You know, and I really love to exploit and make use of the incredible insights of John Paul II.
Yeah, you talk about him, Theology of the Body.
His Theology of the Body and his, I could argue maybe, you know, there's so many to pick from, but certainly I'll put it in the top 10 of, I think he wrote 25 encyclicals, the Veritate Splendor, the Splendor
right.
of Truth.
Absolutely, right.
He just examines the real problems, the so-called, for example, conflict between law and freedom, mm-hmm. and then between the spirit and the world of nature, as if there was some sort of conflict there. All of those tensions mm-hmm. and pessimisms are resolved by, and I do say it's radical and revolutionary. It's divine revelation mm-hmm. that comes in Judaism, starting
right.
out with Judaism and then being absolutely fulfilled
right.
in Catholicism.
Right.
And I make the statement in the book that of all world religions, it is Catholicism that takes this world seriously.
Right. Right.
So it's not about getting out. It's about God encountering us here.
Right.
Yeah, you know, even the that fantastic introduction in St. Luke's Gospel,
right,
where he talks about tracing the events. He uses the words events three times.
Right, you point that out.
In about the first four verses, right, to examine the events and to trace them.
Right, and to indicate these are historical things
right.
recounting
exactly,
for you.
Exactly, right.
right.
So we know then that this world is the arena
right.
of God's saving activity. So pay attention to what's
right.
happening here.
Well, you kind of move, in a sense, from a world of a created God to a creator God.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, where, like you said, where people had to try to figure out what was going on, and so they kind of created their own little ideas of the various gods or things like that. But one of the things that's interesting in the beginning, and we see it today in our society, and I think you were alluding to it with early on, the idea that people don't appreciate the aspects, the ideas that matter inside Judeo-Christian mm-hmm. worldview, and think that these are just natural things that people naturally believe. And you had quoted Cardinal Muller, who said, when the transcendent nature of what it means to be a human is denied, the result is a loss, he said, loss of solidarity and disintegration of social bonds. And isn't that exactly what we see going on now?
Absolute, yes, disintegration. I love that word, by the way, because it says exactly what it means, falling away from the whole,
right.
disintegrating, right? A fragmentation, a radical individualism. These are all our current social problems.
Right, and you quote Huxley here in Brave New World, ingeniously demonstrated how when God is banished, human beings are valued only to the extent that they serve the social order.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we hear that now. I mean, recently heard a person who's incredibly well-known, computer-oriented person who said, well, the future of AI is we'll be able to basically control everybody to make sure they do the right things.
Wow.
As defined by who?
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Thank you. Defined by the
elite.
The dictators.
Right, right.
Right? Forcing their their power upon everyone else, right. Because there is no inherent moral order.
Right.
We have to impose order on a disordered world.
Right. Now, you focus this book on the first eight chapters of the book of the Bible. Why?
Because I think it's there that the stage is set for the final redemption is already there in the first three chapters.
Okay.
That what kind of world did God create? What kind of God is this? What is the relationship between the human person and God? And then why this kind of a deity bothers with us at all, that he would actually redeem what is lost.
Right. Now, you make the point that not only the Judeo-Christian view of reality is revolutionary and that ideas matter, you say you'll also discover here the important ideas of this religious tradition will come away with a deeper understanding of Catholicism. We hear about tradition, and a lot of people say, well, those are accretions, those are things just people added on.
No, any Catholic who understands his or her faith knows that sacred tradition is the handing on of the divine revelation of God in the church that Jesus himself founded and continues to be. He is united with this people, and the church is his bride, and this is an historical institution that carries the truth into the future until the end of time.
So you refer to the first three chapters of Genesis being a study of man. What do you mean by that?
I think that Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 present us with the ultimate anthropology. What does it mean to be human? So we have, for example, in the first chapter of Genesis, these fundamental statements that the human being is created in the image and likeness of God. So what does that mean? And of course, I'm really using, I wouldn't call this book a biblical study.
Right.
What I really am trying to do is provide an interpretation, the meaning of the first three chapters from a, shall we say, a systematic theological perspective. So which allows me a lot of liberty, okay? So I can explain from classical theology, what does it mean in classical theology that the human person is created in God's image? What has to do with the soul? And we are not, and then that opens up a whole new, avenue of understanding, because it's whether people like it or not, okay? And there are certain, shall we say, modern current philosophies that would dismiss this, which I take on in the book.
Right.
But Genesis insists that the human person is different, special. There's something about the human being that's not only material, but also on the side of the divine.
Right.
And this is the backbone of Judeo-Christian ethics,
right.
that to assault and to denigrate and to desecrate, and I love that word too, because it means to harm something that's holy. The human person is an offense against God.
Well, we run into the situation when an attempt is made, maybe naively in some cases, to raise up others. You don't realize you're really lowering human beings.
You mean the animal world?
Yeah, the animal world gets up and
yeah, you know, whales are the equal, and
right,
dolphins, and so.
If everything's sacred, then nothing's sacred. I mean, that's where you really end up. You also talk about the fact that this book, when you put it together, is divided into seven chapters. How'd you break it up into seven? Why seven?
Well, I know that there's a certain kind of, how shall I put it, poetry there, since we have the 7 days, the 6 days of creation, and God rested on the seventh day. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed to come out that way.
Okay.
In terms of
three and seven, two kind of God-like numbers.
Yeah.
You're saying the idea of time, the focus of the Christian religion is on deeds accomplished at a particular time and place that are in themselves salvific, as you kind of alluded to earlier. This means that certain events are the actual religion, and without them, Christianity would not be Christianity.
Yeah. Well, every Catholic and even a whole bunch of Protestants recite the Nicene Creed. Mm-hmm. And the Nicene Creed is a recitation of events that we say we believe in. that the Holy God, that Jesus was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried. Well, where did those things happen?
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Right.
And our salvation is accomplished through those actions that took place in time and in space. And yeah, without them, and going back to the, you know, the introduction to St. Luke's gospel, events are the religion.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, I believe in those events, that those events themselves are salvific.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, the way that Catholics worship in our religion, first of all, is a sacramental religion.
Right.
So that the elements of the world are actually taken up and mediate our relationship to God.
Right.
So they're not, obviously not evil, and
right.
I would even argue they have, you know, bread and water
right.
and oils and so on have a pre-sacramental mm-hmm. meaning that can be put to the use of true worship. But in the Eucharist, what are we doing mm-hmm. in the Eucharist? We're making a historical event that took place over 2,000 years or so, well, not quite yet 2,000, but almost. We're making it present
mm-hmm.
to us, and if, that is our faith,
right.
to be able to participate in the sacrifice of Christ that took place at a particular historical moment, at a particular place in Jerusalem.
You quote somebody named Cornford who talks about philosophy is the rehearsal
yeah,
of death.
Yeah, I love that. Cornford, yeah.
Cornford, yeah.
F.M. Cornford wrote a book called From Religion to Philosophy,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he argues that, you know, I use him in particular because of the way that he very beautifully explains the dualist, shall we say, even pessimistic worldview of the ancients, mostly in Asia Minor and in the Greco-Roman
mm-hmm.
world. But when he says philosophy is the rehearsal of death, he's really saying that if you wanted in the ancient world to, as I say, get out, you have to practice a certain philosophical lifestyle that reduces the world of matter.
Mm-hmm.
So you will try to mimic here what it will be like there.
Mm-hmm.
So philosophy, and so death is the release of everything.
The getting out.
Yeah, the getting out.
The getting out,
right.
And,
and if you're going to accomplish the getting out, you have to practice that the philosophy
mm-hmm.
that you have to cultivate the spirit,
mm-hmm.
and eventually if you've achieved a certain sufficient spirituality,
mm-hmm.
you've reduced the world of matter in your own personal life, you will not have to come back.
Right.
Okay. You will be, and ultimately, what's the goal of getting out? You dissolve yourself.
Right,
you don't really even exist anyway.
Right.
Okay. Yourself, your personal. If you think you're a somebody, it's an illusion.
Right.
Okay. And you keep feeding that illusion. Right.
And that's what some of the major religions, like sort of a Buddhist,
exactly.
approach into
something. Perfect.
Hinduism,
yeah.
obviously, with
right.
the certain levels of spirituality
exactly.
as one goes up the.
Yeah, and so if you ultimately want to be reabsorbed yourself, which doesn't really exist anyway, gets reabsorbed back into the one deity of all things, and everything will be back the way it was, you know, the way it was supposed to be.
Right. Now, you also talk about in the section of the book, the good God of the Jews, and the idea of beginning of salvation with them, is that you mentioned the point that we do not approach Genesis as a science book, at least according to what is meant by science. Why did you make that stipulation?
I think that if we get bogged down in the debate, if you will, that Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 present us mm-hmm. with a scientific worldview, I think we miss the deeper, richer theological truths.
Mm-hmm.
And those, I think, are really what those books are, those books are about.
Mm-hmm.
Telling us what does it mean to be human, what kind of a God is this God who creates, dares audaciously
right.
creates, actually
who's
creates
revealed himself
the world of matter?
Right, who's revealing himself.
Yeah, what kind of a God
right.
is
yeah.
that, right?
Right.
In fact, in the ancient world, the ancients would try to explain the the source of evil is, well, there's an evil God who created matter, the Demiurge, right?
Right, right.
Well, Genesis just, Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 just turn that right on its head.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's I thought this was really good. This idea of the harmony between God and matter is one of the most important building blocks of Judeo-Christian religion that sets it apart from all others.
Yes, that is the key.
Right.
It's one thing to acknowledge, as indeed the ancients to an extreme would have acknowledged, there is this vast difference between God and what is not God, to the point that there is indeed a hostility, an incompatibility. Now, Judeo-Christianity also recognizes that God and matter are different. Okay, they are not the same. You can't collapse God into nature and so on. Okay, so there is a distinction. That's the, maybe that's really the word we want, between the God of...
Right, we're not pantheists.
The God of the Jews and the world of matter are different. Mm-hmm. But the key to the whole thing is that they are not hostile. There is unity. And Genesis chapter 1 is just shot through with this beautiful optimism, where seven times, no less than seven times, this is why the sacred author is driving home the point that everything that God has made is good.
Right.
Says it seven times.
Right, and we're not dealing with a whimsical God who we have to somehow figure out how to please on
any given
day.
Exactly, appease, offer sacrifices to this God.
Right. He's trying to lay out, if you follow my instructions, things will be better.
Everything will be well, exactly.
And only when it doesn't work out, he's corrective.
Right, and at the end of the chapter, chapter one, I love it when it says, and God looked at everything he made and found it very good. So the climax there, and it's like an artist who just finished a painting, or a sculptor who finished a piece of work and steps back. Oh, I really like that. Right. That I did a good job there.
So how did you go from Genesis into bringing up radical feminism? I have some names here I've heard in a while. Mary Daly, Rosemary Radford, Reuther, Elizabeth Johnson. They're not around, are they, as much as maybe their thoughts are still around? Maybe some of them are still around, but you don't hear about them anymore.
Well, that's true, but maybe their heyday was really maybe in the 80s and the 90s. Though they have had a tremendous influence.
It's become so normalized, we don't even see it anymore. Is that what it is?
Well, you know, this whole... we see it with the Synod on Synodality, some of the participants are advocating for women priests and for a female diaconate, all of that, they're standing on the shoulders of these feminist, theologians, maybe I say radical feminist theologians. I talk about them because they really are a voice that is repeating the mistakes of the dualist worldview. Mm-hmm. You've got somebody like Rosemary Radford Reuther, who wanted to, be recognized as a Christian theologian, and actually she had some influence in some of the American bishops. But she actually goes so far as to say, well, what happens to you when you die? You cease to exist, and for her, you collapse back into the world of matter, and that's what's eternal.
Well, okay? That's not Christianity.
It certainly has nothing to do with Christianity, but she thinks that that's somehow something to celebrate. Right. And I think I say in the book, wow, what a dismal worldview.
Right. Well, the trouble is, that's why we're seeing the suicide rates go up, and that's why we're seeing so much depression, because the reality is these kinds of philosophies and approaches to life are dismal, and people feel like there's no hope.
Yeah.
Now, I like how you jump ahead, and I'll jump ahead later in the book, Transgenderism, which you alluded to earlier in the impact. Joseph Fletcher, who was he?
Oh, Joseph Fletcher. I actually met him.
Oh, did you really?
Okay. Yes, he gave a speech when I was a student at Loyola University in Chicago, and I attended it. Joseph Fletcher was an Anglican priest, and he is credited, if you want to be credited with this, as being the father of situation ethics. And he made a statement in the speech that he gave at Loyola, and he said, to create a human being artificially, with artificial methods, is more human than through natural sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody in the room is like, what does he mean? Mm-hmm. He means that for something to be truly human, the human mind has to impose order on something that is random and arbitrary. Mm-hmm. So when you create a child, husband and wife create a child in the natural way, you're taking chances. Mm-hmm. You don't control the product, okay? But if you move the procreation, at this point reproduction, into the laboratory, you can control, so more human. But then the question is, Doug, what is his anthropology? Right. His anthropology is the human being is essentially intellect.
Right.
And liberty, freedom. So this, and now we take those ideas that the human being has to create itself. Mm-hmm. Because the body and the material world of the body has no inherent ontological order that's given by God. Natural law is out the window.
In which case you can be whatever you'd like
exactly.
to be.
Exactly. I will force my material self, and this is trans, you know, the transgenderism is only possible if you have this dualist, Gnostic point of view about what it means to be human.
Right.
That the body itself is mere material mm-hmm. that can be exploited and changed, altered, manipulated, mutilated to fit my mind.
Right.
And so we crush it to fit my soul, my intellect, my freedom, and my mind.
Right, and it's crushing our society and crushing a lot of our culture. So thank you so much, Monica.
Thank you.
Always great to be with you. Her book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World, from the first three chapters of Genesis, but so much more in this book. Check it out, available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com. We'll see you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.